Only twice before in my more than two decades of doing radio shows have I had family members on my show. Once was when I had my dad on the air with me after he wrote a book about the Statue of Liberty. And I had my mom on the air when I called and surprised her at work on the last day before she retired. It's the only other times I've ever had any family members on the air. My wife and daughter have never been on the air, and you'll never hear them on this show. But my brother is on the phone with me now, and he has a story to tell. And it's really a personal story because his office is six blocks away from the World Trade Center. And my entire family, not just to here in Missouri, but everywhere else in the country, I spoke to relatives and got email from relatives all over the country saying, is Seth okay? What's the story? We know he works not far from there. What's the deal? And what was more frustrating was yesterday, because of all of the stuff going on in New York and the fact that the communications towers on top of the World Trade Center weren't there anymore, it was virtually impossible to get a phone call through it in New York. I did manage to leave a message on his voicemail in his office, but he couldn't get back to me yesterday. So we were worried for a long time until his wife finally called and said he's okay. He's in a car. He's trying to get his way out of New York City. And when I finally spoke to him late yesterday, I said, will you come on the show today and tell your story? So, Seth, thanks for coming on today.
My pleasure, actually. This is a story I wish I didn't or couldn't tell. And I, as you said, I tried to get back to you yesterday. Our long-distance lines were down, and I'm sure it was a story that was repeated thousands of times, maybe millions of times throughout the city. People trying to tell loved ones I'm okay, or here's where I am, or I'll be home at this time, or just to hear their voices. And I was trying to get through to you. I tried to get through to my wife, and I was not able to do it for a long period of time. And that, for a lot of our students, that created a not insubstantial amount of panic.
I'm sure. Seth is a professor of law at the New York College of Law in New York City, as I said, six blocks away from the World Trade Center. Before we talk about where you were when all this happened, you go by the World Trade Center fairly often, don't you?
I do it every day. One of the reasons that we moved to the town that we moved to here in New Jersey is that there's easy access by train to lower Manhattan. So you take the train from here to Hoboken, New Jersey, and then you either take the path to the World Trade Center, or you take the path as a train, it's like a subway, or you take a ferry across the Hudson. I like to take the ferry because of the fantastic skyline that you get to see every morning, and one of the most important landmarks, of course, is the World Trade Center. The ferry pulls in at the World Financial Center, which is just west of the World Trade Center, not even an eighth of a mile from the World Trade Center. So I pull right in next to the World Trade Center every morning.
And you walk up a few blocks to go to work every day, and now when you're on that ferry, you're going to look up and
it'll be gone.
And the skyline is completely different now.
Absolutely. If the ferry can even put in there anymore, I don't know if it can.
That's going to be an interesting security question, and New York has a lot of those security questions. Okay, so where were you when you actually heard the boom of the first plane?
I did. My class usually starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. I get into the classroom at about 8:45. Just as I got into the classroom, you could hear an explosion in the background. I didn't know it was an explosion. It sounded like a very large truck hitting one of those metal construction sheets that they sometimes put on the road if there's a big pothole in the road.
Yeah.
It's just a loud bang. I didn't know what it was. My classroom, though, faces Church Street, which is the southern part of 6th Avenue in Manhattan. If you go all the way, go six blocks down Church Street, that's where the World Trade Center is. And one of my students was looking south and said there's been an explosion at the World Trade Center, but, you know, it's hard to know exactly what was going on. There were about 80 students in the room. I have about 120 students. Eventually, the class almost filled up, but there was a lot of buzz and a lot of nervousness. We started class a little after 9. A few minutes later, maybe 15 minutes later, we heard another loud sound. It was a lot of grumbling and sort of almost like people had been punched in the stomach, that kind of sound from people. We didn't know what it was. By this time, about a third of the students in my class were running in and out of the classroom, trying to get on their cell phones. A lot of people in my class and a lot of people in our school, and this is true of people throughout New York City, know people who work in the World Trade Center. There are 50,000 people who work in the World Trade Center, so it touches a large number of people in the city. So they were trying to reach their parents, their friends, their family members who worked in the World Trade Center. I had students who were crying because they couldn't reach friends. They were just scared. They didn't know if there was some danger to us. And not long after that, we just canceled class. The school was closed. But you could see out the windows and out our doors that the streets were just bedlam. People were running up Church Street. You could hear a chorus of sirens in the background. You could see flashing lights absolutely everywhere. There were clouds of smoke, not in the school, but you could see them down Church Street and down West Broadway, which is a little bit west also, which is six blocks down. And it actually ends at the World Trade Center. So you could see a lot of people running through the street. There were people with surgical masks on and those sort of construction masks that some construction workers use so that they don't breathe in particulates.
Mm-hmm.
So we went downstairs. The student center is on the first floor where the entrance is, and there were a large number of students gathered there, and I spent most of my time basically consoling, hysterical, crying students who either couldn't reach relatives or who were working in the World Trade Center or friends who worked in the World Trade Center, people who were upset because they couldn't call out and get in touch with their family to let them know that they were okay, the same position that I was in, people who just, you know, we were under attack. We didn't know what was going on. People had the television on and were trying to figure out what was going on. So that was how I spent a good bit of my morning. I also was trying to help our dean just calm everybody down and get them into one place so that we could give them whatever information we had. And a couple of hours later, by about 10:30, I was up on the eighth floor of our building, which is where my office is, and also the student law reviews have their offices up there. And I was on the eighth floor, again, looking out a window that is on Church Street, and I was looking down Church Street. I'd heard a loud, very loud noise. I looked out, and it turned out, I didn't know it at the time, that it was the second tower of the World Trade Center collapsing, and there was a grayish, black smoke ball. It could have been 20 stories or so high, rolling up Church Street. You know, I wish I could give you a metaphor, an analogy for what it looked like, but I've never seen anything like this in my life.
It's a 20-foot-high smoke ball pretty much explains it. Yeah. I mean, we know what you mean by the debris and the dust and the ash and the smoke that was rolling up the street.
It was rolling up the street. You could hear people screaming. Some people were screaming, run. There were hundreds of people sprinting as fast as they could up Church Street. There were emergency vehicles with their lights flashing and their sirens on, racing down Church Street towards the World Trade Center. Just bedlam people. We've all seen these horror movies, these movies, Deep Impact and others, where, you know, horrible calamities happen. They can't capture it because they can't give you that sense of horror and terror that people are experiencing when they're running up a street, having seen this tremendous, the largest building on the East Coast collapse, and this 20-foot smoke ball advancing up Church Street, and also up, I guess it was also going up West Broadway.
All right, now you're six blocks away. Does this giant smoke ball come to your building? Was there impact of debris and just effluvia, for lack of a better word, against the windows and side of your building?
I don't think the smoke ball reached all the way up to us. In fact, it looked like it was advancing towards us, but I don't think it actually made it to us. And I think also the wind was blowing towards the east, so it didn't come north. But there was soot on the ground, and you could see it, and people were wearing surgical masks so they could breathe it. When I went out on the street later, I eventually drove home with some of my coworkers, and you could see trucks and cars and vans coming north from that area, and they were covered with soot as though it were snow. I heard Elisa Solomon talk about it was like a snow day. Well, these cars were covered in up to 6 inches of soot.
Oh.
You couldn't tell what color the cars were often because they were that covered with soot and dirt. It was really surreal. You know, I'm trying to analogize it to a movie. You can't really do that because you're there and it's surreal. It's beyond reality. You can't really even understand it because it's nothing like anything you've ever seen before.
Now, when you went outside, the soot and smoke were south of you, but you saw a lot of it on these cars and trucks and buses. When you got outside, By that time, New York City was closed. I said to your wife, Karen, when I spoke to her, you know, she didn't know where you were or what the story was, but I said, how is he going to get home? I heard that they closed off all the bridges and tunnels.
They did. I mean, this is a remarkable thing, because they didn't know, I assume it was because they didn't know whether there were going to be further attacks. And people forget that Manhattan is an island, because it's so big and because there are so many people on it. People forget that Manhattan is an island. And they closed all of the bridges going in and out of Manhattan. They closed the subway system down. They closed the airports down. There are no airports in Manhattan, but there are heliports. Those were closed. And all the boat traffic was closed. So there was no way to get in and out of Manhattan, at least for a time. They've now, I think, begun to open the Hudson River crossings, the crossings from New Jersey into Manhattan. The East River crossings were opened a little bit earlier yesterday. What we did was, one of my coworkers who lives in New Jersey was nice enough to give a bunch of us a ride home. What we did was we drove north. You could only go north. We drove north from the school. The streets were absolutely quiet. There was very little car traffic except for emergency vehicles racing almost always the wrong way, all heading south on northbound streets. We drove very slowly. There were a lot of people just sort of standing around in shock, looking down south where the World Trade Center used to be and just seeing these huge plumes of smoke. So we drove slowly north and went north out of Manhattan through the Bronx all the way up to the Tappan Zee Bridge, which I know you understand, but your listeners may not understand. That's about 10 miles north of Manhattan in order to cross the Hudson River to go into New Jersey. So, and a lot of people were trying to do the same thing because it was the only way to get over to New Jersey, and a lot of people who work in New York live in New Jersey. So it was quite a trip, and everywhere we went up until fairly north, far north of Manhattan, there were people just standing on the corners of their streets looking around trying to reconcile what they had heard and seen, trying to imagine what was going on, and I think looking for comfort from one another.
Seth, when you left your building, was there damage to your building?
No, our building wasn't damaged, and I don't think the damage spread much beyond a couple of block radius of the World Trade Center. There was nothing actually hit our building, and there wasn't even a lot of soot around our building. There was some, not a lot, and there was a little bit of smoke, not a lot. The police had asked us to stay indoors because of the air quality, but I think that was just precautionary. That wasn't because there was really a risk to us. But, of course, we don't know that. And when you're talking about two 110-story buildings, we don't know how, if there's an explosion, how they're going to fall. And they could have reached us, I guess, but none of us, were thinking about that. We were in such shock from the incident. I don't think that any of us felt immediately in danger from the World Trade Center. It was just shock from the horror of the event.
You did not have to go to work today, right?
Well, the school is closed, and not only the school, but every business in the southern part of Manhattan is closed. There are no cars south of 14th Street. All of the electricity in that part of Manhattan is shut off, I assume, for safety reasons. We're not going to be able to open up again until Wednesday of next week. But the consequences of this are a lot broader than that. I'll give you just a little bit of a vignette from our town. As I said, we moved here because there's easy access to Lower Manhattan where I work. A lot of other people moved here for the same reason, because it's easy to get to Wall Street and to the World Trade Center, where the financial markets are located. So our next-door neighbors are in high school here in Montclair, and they reported to us that there were 60 or 70 students who were called into the library because their parents worked in the World Trade Center, and they needed to be told that something had happened in the World Trade Center. Those 60 or 70 students didn't know if their parents were ever going to come home.
Mm.
So it reaches into our community. There are people that I rode the train with every day, including this very wonderful young woman who is an auditor for Morgan Stanley. I don't know where she is, and I don't know what happened to her. So even though I didn't have any family or close friends in the World Trade Center, this is going to touch hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in the New York area, because the World Trade Center was like a small city, sort of a mid-sized city. 50,000 people work there every day.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, if I could just take one more minute, Paul, I heard you talking to Maria Bartiromo, and you were focusing, understandably, on the financial industry and what the effect was going to be. A lot of people forget that the World Trade Center is also one of the largest shopping areas in Manhattan, there was this tremendous mall underneath the World Trade Center that had all the stores, you know, the Gap and Banana Republic. So it wasn't just the traders at Morgan Stanley who were in this horrible incident. It was the clerk at the Banana Republic. It was the pharmacist at the Rite Aid. It was, sorry, I'm choking up a little bit.
That's okay. There were, you're right. There were banks and restaurants and shops and,
you know,
stores.
There were the ladies who sold me the muffins at this little bakery that I used to go to every day. So,
yeah. And not only that, but that was also a major train station there, the PATH train station, which you used to go to,
sure.
Which went in and out of there, and subway stations, et cetera. So the impact is much more far-reaching than the people who were up in those towers. You're absolutely right.
Right.
My nephew's okay?
Your nephews are just fine. I don't think they quite understand this, but... Someday we'll explain it to them.
Just a couple of months old and just a couple of years old, I wouldn't expect them to. I love you, and I'm glad that you're safe. And we were worried about you yesterday, and I'm glad you got out of there. And I hope that all of the people who you will go back to work with next week are okay as well.
I hope the same thing. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thanks for coming on with me today. This is my brother Seth, a professor of law in New York. I told you many times before, he's the smart one in the family.